Hey, it's David Cherry. I help founders and creators discover what they've overlooked in themselves and turn it into an amazing opportunity for their business and brand. In this series, I wanted to ask some of my friends and favorite creators the one question they've never been asked before. About that thing that they're most excited about but wouldn't come up easily in a common conversation. What you'll hear is their answers unfiltered with some light editing, so that you can learn about each person through a subject that's most meaningful to them. I hope it sparks something in you as well.
How do we, if we're willing to show up with that kind of depth and presence, how do we invite others to do the same? If I'm able to stand in that place of depth, curiosity, of insight, myself in a very intuitive, embodied manner, I will naturally evoke that place in other people. And if it's not something that they're willing to explore, then usually the conversation ends right there. But people want to share. They're just not given an opportunity. People love talking about their ideas, and they should. We learn so much from them. How often do we get the chance to do that? Well, my name is Kirit. I am currently a student at Columbia studying psychology and contemplative science, which is a science of meditation and associated practices. So I work one-on-one with clients within two different programs that I have. I have a one-on-one mentorship program and then an 8-week program for young women in particular. And I also teach meditation across the city now. Well, now everything's virtually, so like across different online platforms. My main form of intention when working with individuals is helping them know themselves in order to befriend themselves, and not just in a self-care, self-love way, but in the way where we can begin to extend deep reverence and dignity and respect for ourselves, and all of the ways that we have tried to show up and we have showed up and have tried to maintain any semblance of safety and comfort that we can, and all of the ways that we still try to do that, even if it doesn't play out to our best interest, knowing that it always comes back from the deepest desire to love and to be loved. So helping people realign with what's really going on. I have this deep, deep desire, and something that I've been thinking about a lot, to build a psychological intervention for adolescents transitioning into adulthood as a rite of passage, as they do in Indigenous cultures. So what would that look like? What would that entail? For example, now when you think about different African cultures and Indigenous cultures, and even cultures in India, there's a ritual to when a girl first starts hitting puberty and what happens. And she's sent away, she's praying, she's meditating, and then she's brought back into the village as a woman. And the same thing happens with a man, but it's usually in group. He has to sort of, you know, really go through this series of obstacles to show that he's ready to take on this stage of manhood. And we don't really have that in the West, and not in the contemporary world anyway. We have things like driver's license, you can vote, you can drink, you get a car, you graduate, like different events that can mark progress and social maturity, but we don't have anything that facilitates the emotional and spiritual growth. So we're all just sort of blindly traveling. But that stark contrast from being an adolescent to transitioning to adulthood is so vital. And I really see that this is why now the rise of anxiety, depression, suicide, eating disorders, and all these different ailments in teens has really grown, because they don't know what to do. They're fragmented as individuals, and we as a collective haven't provided a container for them to heal or to transition in a skillful way. We've just sort of said, get the best grades, go to a good college, that's your most important thing. And it's really sad to see how many people are now orienting that level of destruction and frustration inward, with suicide, with self-harm, with drinking, with drugs, with just excessive amounts of maladaptive mechanisms. And it doesn't have to be that way. But if they're not guided or supported, or if the world after adolescence isn't ready to hold them and see them in a way that they want to be seen, then why would they change? There's no incentive for them to do so. So part of what I really want to do is create that incentive and really like start to build a structure where teens can feel teens and, you know, somewhat of a younger age as well, from 12 to 13, can also feel as though they are not doing this alone. I think the most important thing to do, and something that for many people might be the most reasonable thing to do in the shortest amount of time, is to build a community. Even if it's one friend, even if it's one elder, one mentor, community is integral to be able to know that you're not in this alone, not even on a psychological level, but recognizing the truth of the interconnectedness world that we live in, of the universe that we live in. And I think that for so many centuries, a lot of traditions have had ritual elders and spiritual guidance. And naturally, with the separation of church and state, and with the sort of rejection of church altogether, and now sort of praying and bowing down to scientific materialism, like, can we measure it? Is there proof? I think that there's value to that, but I think that we've swung the pendulum now the other way, to where we don't account for that cannot be measured, and we don't account for those experiences in the part of the world and the part of our lives that can't be touched directly by other people. But there's something so deeply profound about a safe, stable, nourishing connection with a loving human being that can, I think, change things in ways that we have no idea. And even if from doing some research and from lived experience of working with some students and younger people now in high school, when people feel like they have someone they can count on or someone else that is invested in their health, they're less likely to do the things that result in destruction, because they also, part of the human condition is that not only do we want to rely on other people, but we want to feel reliable, as though others can depend on us. So for noticing that there's a mutual pattern of that we have people relying on us to be stable, to show up, and we can also rely on them, we feel more inclined naturally to show up and do the right thing. But if that's absent, it's really difficult to not just find the motivation, but sustain it over that period of time. I feel like I've had so many transition points where I've really needed someone to meet me at that threshold when I was ready to take the next step, or forced in taking the next step. And yes, I think that there's something, I think that's why it's easier for me to maintain faith in mankind, is because when I've really needed the presence of another individual, and even if it was someone at my own age at the time, a peer, a mentor, a teacher, a counselor, there was always someone there that made it very clear that they were invested in me. And that knowing, that feeling, that trust, that connection, I think beat and really became more of a priority in learning about myself and in transitioning into the next stage with much more grace and skill and integrity than anything else could have done. Just knowing that I wasn't only doing it for me, but I was doing it for other people that now were invested in me. From like Buddhist teachers, from peers, from friends that I've met at school, I feel really lucky that I can say that. So if you're interested in getting to know me better or working with me, you can go on my website and I can send you the information for that, and join any of my meditation classes throughout the week.